Yes, you can take me now. I have seen it all. I've seen it all because Matt Russell has brushed me.
Oh, my goodness.
It's taken 22 weeks, but Matt Russell has finally woken up to the fact that he would rather spend Monday mornings somewhere else other than talking rugby league off the back of a big weekend of rugby league talking footy. He doesn't want to do it anymore, so... Lara Pitt is with me. Lara, you have saved the day.
I have. Well, it's wonderful to be here, Woz. This is going great guns. I think Maddie just needed a much-needed rest, not from you, but just a week off. So I'm so pleased to fill the void, and I think I've got big boots to fill, to be honest.
Not at all. You are more than up for the job. Now, we usually start the podcast with our highlight of the weekend or highlight of the past week or so. What was... dancing before your eyes over the weekend?
Well, mine was a little bit away from football. On Friday, I took a trip out to North Richmond with my colleagues Blocker and Michael Ennis. Went out to the Hawke's City Junior Rugby League Club and spent a day at their major fundraiser. And I guess it was a highlight for me because it's going back to what rugby league is all about. Junior football, all the people that put a lot of hard work into our great game from the grassroots level who ultimately put their efforts into who will hopefully be our superstars of the future. So it was great sitting around, having a yarn at the table, having lunch and hearing about all the work they do at their club. And then also getting up and, I guess, poking the bear, poking Blocker and him telling some unbelievable yarns.
That wouldn't take much.
Oh, my goodness. Seriously, it wasn't for the faint-hearted, some of the yarns that we went through, but that's what it's all about in rugby league. People love hearing the old stories and sitting around. And, you know, it was great to just... touch base with fans that love Fox League as well and talk to them about the season. We had some Panthers in the house. Peter Wallace was there and Dylan Edwards, who we know are injured. But, it was great to see them give their time and to give back to the community of rugby league. It was good fun.
And I know the Hawkesbury Hawks pretty well because I've played in their golf day for the last couple of years and they do a big fundraiser for their under-14s who, for the first time last year, went on a trip to Fiji and played some of the local school teams over there in Fiji, which was... as you can imagine, massively eye-opening for not only the Fijian kids, but for the kids from outer Western Sydney to go to Fiji and suddenly get an idea of what the kids over there don't have in reality. And they were able to work on some of their school buildings and do some stuff over there to really help out the local community. So they get a lot out of that. And, it doesn't happen unless... you have these sort of fundraisers, which you went to and I've been to with the golf days in the past with Brandy and also Braith and Astor out there. It brings you back to reality. I mean, and floating around NRL grounds and jumping off planes, and it seems glamorous at times. Yeah. It's hard work through the course of a season, but, that's at the elite end of the sport, quite obviously at the grassroots end. We always talk about the grassroots and how it needs to be looked after. There is so much good work that gets done by mums and dads and volunteers. And Gordy Tallis mentioned this in his speech at the Immortals last week when he was nominated and inducted into the Hall of Fame. He mentioned exactly that.
Yeah, this is where it all comes back to. And another part to the story was their A-grade team. I met their trainer, who is a female, and there's not many female trainers running around out there. And she hopes, and I was quite inspired by her because her dream is to be a trainer at the NRL level one day, and she was asking Peter Wallace and Dylan Edwards how would they feel about having a woman out there running the water and telling them what the coach's message is, and they were like, oh, it'd be totally fine, we've got women involved in the club at various levels. And she's inspired, and it was great to meet her and have a chat about the hurdles as a woman in the game that you can face. But I encouraged her that now it's a different landscape, and I'm sure that one day we will see a female trainer running out at NRL level one day.
Why not? I mean, the glass ceiling as far as salaries are concerned hasn't been completely smashed as yet, but the opportunity for women, no matter what the job may be in rugby league, predominantly a male sport for the past 110 years in this country, there's no reason that females can't do any of the jobs available. And as we've seen, Raylene Castle, a CEO of an NRL club, I mean, we will have at some stage, I think, it may not be Casey Badger or Belinda Sleeman, but we will have at some stage a female referee. It will happen at some stage, I have no doubt. My highlight...
yes, your highlight
of the weekend. Now, this is a bit old school, but I pick up the Daily Telegraph this morning and I see Scott Bailey has this story about Lachlan Lewis, who has really made a name for himself in the past month or so, getting a chance to play 5/8 with the Bulldogs, given everything that's happened there and players departing, Kieran Foran's out of action, so players are getting chances they wouldn't normally get. Lachlan Lewis has taken his with both hands, and I read that his grandfather, now of course he's Wally Lewis's nephew, but it's his grandfather, Jim, who the family didn't have a lot of money, so instead of using tackling bags, and in the modern day, every club, everybody has tackling bags, he had the old school blow-up truck tyre inner tubes and he would tackle, and his grandfather would roll them. So, you know, the tackling bag, they're just sort of standing there and you run up and you tackle it.
Yeah.
But the inner tube, you roll it, and then you've got to get your head in the right place with the right shoulder and hit that moving target. Now, this is going back to what it was when I was a kid coming through playing junior footy. You had the truck tyres and the inner tubes, and that's how you learnt part of the way you learnt to tackle. I'm delighted
Bring
to see
back.
That it is still working. And Lachlan Lewis is an outstanding defender.
What about the tackles he was putting on Tevita Pangai Jr. on the weekend?
And the week before it was Luke Garner for the Tigers, just kept running at him and kept chopping him down a couple of metres out
no
from the line.
No fear, no thought for self-preservation, which is what you want to see. I'm sure Dean Pay would have been thrilled as an enforcer himself see his playmaker putting on those hits. Yeah. Maybe they need to get those old tyres out and at training for the Bulldogs going forward.
Would you supply one of those old tyres for James Maloney? Because the Panthers made the big comeback yesterday, and that is the big story off the back of yesterday's action over the NRL, but the Panthers win in spite of themselves, and one of the reasons they win in spite of themselves is the fact that James Maloney keeps throwing intercept passes. And he did so again yesterday, and they keep at times hurting the Panthers. For the most part, as New South Wales found out, they found a way past those intercepts. But at some stage in a big game, one of those intercepts is going to hurt them. But what will also hurt the Panthers is James Maloney's defence, because he's playing hurt. He's got a broken thumb, or he's got a broken something in his hand. He's had this toe injury. Matt Russell and I on the podcast last week were saying if we were in charge of the Panthers, we'd be resting James Maloney. He wouldn't have played yesterday. If I was in charge of the Panthers, he wouldn't have played against Canberra, and he probably wouldn't be playing this week either. I'd have had him out for a couple of weeks to rest and get better. But his defence is suffering badly.
Is it too late to be resting players, Woz? Because I feel like the Dragons are a bit guilty of this too at the moment. They probably should have rested Jack DeBellin a couple of weeks ago. And there's this pressure now that top four is still on the table, and it's so important to make the top four to get a second chance. So, I mean, Maloney came out this week and said he should have rested himself for the Manly game. He didn't even tell Hook that he had a neck injury leading into the Manly game because he knew how important it was. He played, and then afterwards he said, oh, mate, probably shouldn't have played. I had a neck injury when I woke up this morning. My neck was, you know, so players are taking matters into their own hands a bit and just going, you know, I know the team needs me. I spoke to Jimmy after the ridiculous comeback against Manly, and I know he always looks a bit battered and bruised, but he looked next level. He just looks exhausted. He was banged up particularly badly after the game against Manly. And I also think that the captaincy is weighing a bit on James. It's probably, it is the first time in his career he's had to take on that role. And obviously it was something that had to happen because Peter Wallace was forced into retirement mid-year. So yes, physically he's got all of this going on, but then mentally it's a new challenge for him because he's guiding a team around as a playmaker. He has to keep his cool in these moments because they're all young players around him. And I don't think you can underestimate how big a... And you hear players when they talk about the captaincy. It takes time to get used to that. Greg Inglis took time to get used to being the South Sydney captain. And all those things can add to what's on his plate. I also thought today, though, about this whole comeback theory that they can't keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you remember the Cowboys in 2015?
The Comeback Kings.
And they went on and they won a premiership. Sometimes if it can become a thing where you just believe, oh, it doesn't matter, we're gonna win. Remember that mentality
that they had?
And I know it's too late. Maybe it's coming a bit late in the season because the Cowboys did it the whole year, that year.
That's right.
They backed themselves to do it. And this is maybe happening not at the right time and they could get found out. But I don't know, there is that not arrogance, but that cockiness about the way they play that, well, we can put on a try. And when they were, was it still 15 minutes to go? And I was like, they could seriously score another 10 tries, you know, because that's...
Because when they're in that mood, it's like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. It's must-see TV. You can't take your eyes off it because they could go try, kick off, try, kick-off try. They can score three or four in a row.
And that's when the opposition is tired because they've usually put all their energy. So, I don't know. I don't think it's the way you want to win a premiership, and your fans would just be counting their, like, their pulses would be through the roof. And yeah, but I don't know. I feel like it's still a thing to have in your kit bag that you can, no matter in what position you're in a game. Like, there are other teams that are behind that you look at, you go, they're not, there's no way in hell they're coming back. Mm.
They sort of remind me a little bit, sorry, about the 2005 West Tigers.
Mm.
You know, not that the Tigers had all these comebacks week after week, but, you know, they had that fearlessness about them that they could just outscore you, and they gave up plenty of points during that run to the grand final and beating the North Queensland Cowboys. Mm. But they, at times, could just carve teams apart like we rarely see.
Yeah.
So, for mine, they had that look about them as far as the West Tigers are concerned. Now, to win the premiership, you've got to win either three or four games in a row at the end of the season against the best teams, quite obviously.
Mm.
You know, Canberra, while as good as they were at times yesterday, again, they haven't beaten a top eight team this year. They're 0-9. Yeah. 0-9 against
really
the top eight teams. I mean, so I'm careful not to get too caught up in the Panthers story. Because last week it was Manly. This week it's Canberra.
Yep.
If you're going to do it, against the Roosters, you might be in a different situation as far as coming from 20 points or 14 points down, whatever it may be.
Yeah, well, we've got the Titans this week again, so not a team that's in for any kind of, you know, not a lot in it for the Titans, but, yeah, I guess these are the games they have to be putting away from the get-go, the first minute.
I guess, unsurprisingly in some ways, given the mood in the NRL at the moment, that one of the big talking points off the back of this win yesterday by Penrith was the fact that Josh Mansour scores the try that puts the Panthers in the lead off a, I'm going to say it was a forward pass. It was slightly forward. It wasn't a lot in it, but it was a forward pass.
Mm.
And that has become the topic off the back of that win yesterday. It's got a lot more airtime for mine than what was the real issue for Canberra, apart from, you know, finding a way again to lose a game where they had a very comfortable lead and they just can't close out games. But I haven't seen one mention anywhere in any forum, any type of media in the past 24 hours or less now since the game was played, of the fact that Blake Austin and Sam Williams on the left-hand side, their defence again was like Swiss cheese.
Mm.
And this just keeps happening around Blake Austin, and is one of the main reasons Blake Austin will be playing for the Warrington Wolves and not the Canberra Raiders in 2019.
Mm.
But that story gets lost because one of the first questions that gets asked of Ricky Stewart after the game yesterday is, should we have the video bunker available to rule on forward passes?
Yeah. Well, you're causing a real stir. We can't walk away from this, this weekend. Around, I guess, the messages that are being put out there around the referees, you're not happy necessarily with this hysteria around it. You feel like it's growing instead of maybe thinking that it's always been this way. So I think some people think you're making this a bit personal, are you?
No. And the journo who asked that question at the press conference yesterday was Paul Crawley. Now, if you've been on Twitter and you follow either myself or Paul, you don't even have to follow us, I'm guessing, in the last couple of weeks to see we've had a bit of a, you know, it's been handbags of 10 paces.
Yeah.
Let's be serious about it. You know, I'm a TV football commentator. Paul's a football journo. Here we are arguing about, in reality, a part of the game that, for mine, doesn't decide whether you go and watch a game on the weekend or whether you watch a game on TV. We would like referees to be perfect, but it's unrealistic. And I think there's an expectation, if you drill down into it, among some of the journos, that they, no matter what happens as far as who's in charge of the referees department or who the CEO is and the governance around all that side of it, it wouldn't matter if there's a mistake made. Now, you could have anybody in charge of the referees department. You could change the CEO today. Todd Greenberg's got on. We put somebody else in. But when you have the situation the other week where Matty Moylan comes through and makes that tackle and gets penalised for what, in essential, he was trying to catch the ball, but it ends up being penalised when they're playing the Broncos up there. And that was, you know, in people's minds, a key point in the game. It doesn't matter who's in charge of the departments.
Mm.
You're still going to have situations like that where a referee has to make a decision on the spot. Unless you want to make it like the NFL and we stop everything and video it five times to see what happened.
Yeah.
But that there is, yeah. You just can't remove the potential for mistakes to be made.
The problem is that there has been a lot of money, a lot of effort, a lot of resources dedicated to pushing towards perfection. So they've got a bunker now. We've got all of these bells and whistles. So it's almost like there's too much at available now, so everyone expects that they've got to get it right, you've got to be perfect. And there seems to be this sense that if we strip it back again and if it is just an on-the-spot decision, then you would accept it more. But because there's all these other options to go to the bunker has all these angles, why can't they get it right? Mm-hmm. That's what people are upset with. Maybe, and then you go and you attack the people that have made those decisions, right? The people that have put all that money into the bunker and put all these resources into the referees, because you go, well, you're doing all of that, but it's not making the game better. That's ultimately what I imagine people are frustrated with, is that if we're going to, you know, make all this effort, why can't we get it right? Why can't we stop the game, go to the bunker? Why can't we use the technology to prevent forward passes? Otherwise, why have it there at all? And then just go back to it's all on the referee, and maybe people will back off and go, okay, he's going to make a mistake every now and then. It's a human error.
I know, and that's a nice idea, but it's not going to happen, is it? Because that's why we're at where
we are
now.
That's the NRL's put themselves in this mess. They've put all these extra layers into refereeing, into, you know, now the referees can second guess themselves, they can choose to go to the bunker. It's just too much going on. So that's why they're under more criticism.
And in reflection, you know, maybe the idea was sold, or the idea was garnered by the punters, was that all of this was going to eliminate refereeing errors forever. How unrealistic is that?
Well, of course, but I think it's come from a good place. Absolutely, Todd Greenberg's gone to the NFL. He's gone and looked at, wow, what are they doing here? Okay, this is gonna stop the referee howler, because let's face it, there was some. Well, the one that always comes to mind is the 7-tackle set, and that bunker can't even fix that because that was a counting mistake, but. The point is that those are the things he was trying to eliminate.
Sure.
But all that money, it's just all those things. People are going, well, you know, you put all this money, you've put all these resources, you've got a boss, then there's all these people around it. Then there's the bloody refs on the field who can't, you know, who are so confused. So I think that's where the criticism comes in, at the process that we've got to, at this situation. We've overcomplicated it. And can you imagine them going backwards now and going, okay, let's shut down the bunker? They're not going to do that.
No. Well, of course they're not, because the moment somebody scored a try, and we saw in the first replay that he didn't score the try, he dropped the ball a metre from the ground, but the referees didn't see it, which is what used to happen. And if we cast our memories back,
so
that's exactly
TV's
what used to
blame,
happen.
Right?
And that's why. And, you know, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. We are not going to go back to a time in place where there was one referee and there was no video referrals and there was no bunker and... There were errors. People forget there were howlers, errors made every week. Mm. And people were screaming and carrying on about it, saying, we can see it on the TV. Why can't they overrule it? Which is exactly why 22 years ago, we brought in video referees. And, you know, here we are in all sports at the moment, across the board, grappling with this very situation.
Yeah.
But to bring it back to yesterday, Paul's beef yesterday is the fact that, you know, we don't use the video referee for those decisions on forward passes. But at what point is a forward pass a backwards pass? Because, you know, my forward pass is you're okay with it.
Well, at the end of the day...
It's like the old saying, you know, one person's terrorist is another person's freedom fighter.
They're going to have to get more technology to get it perfect, right? They're going to have a camera following the ball and have it right on the pass, because at the moment, the wide shot that we've got... It's subjective, right? What you see is a forward pass versus what I see is different. Unless you have the camera, which we don't have at Fox League, we can't provide the bunker with that shot right in line with the pass. So, sure, give it to the bunker. Watch them not agree with you or me, and then everyone will still be unhappy.
The blowing up would continue on, because at some point you'd have half the audience saying, well, that quite obviously...
I saw it.
That quite obviously wasn't forward, and the other half would say
until
that quite obviously was forward.
Until you can put a line and the camera is in line with it, then you're never going to get it 100% right.
It's unrealistic, and Anthony Griffin said as much yesterday. Ricky Stewart deflected it. He didn't want to get involved in it because Ricky to his credit, realises he's been embroiled in so much of this. Yeah. He has been the poster boy as far as referees and reactions at media conferences from coaches. He has been the poster boy. Yeah. He doesn't want to get fined again. He yeah. deflected it. Anthony Griffin said it's not going to happen.
Yeah, James Maloney said it was a mile back.
Of course he did. Of course he did. And we all believe James.
Yes, of course.
We all believe James. So, you know, I guess, you know, I've pretty much said it all as far as the whole debate around the, I guess, the tone, of the coverage
with
referees.
I'm sick of it. I don't want to talk about referees anymore. Like, we want to talk about the finals. We want to talk about the football. I don't think yesterday was a big game to draw a line in the sand and saying they're stuffing up.
But Paul, you know, again, yesterday says, what if this happened in a finals game?
Yeah.
It's like, Paul, mate, hello. Have you been watching finals for the last 20 years? Finals have been riddled with controversy in every season. Last year, the world was going to end in the NRL, given what happened in the finals. You remember those games? So we have controversy in finals. We're always, at some point, going to have a controversial call.
Yeah.
And that's my point. There is always going to be that controversy.
God. I think I was there when JT's heart was broken by Kieran Foran's Hand of God. Was that what it was?
You can you can go through them year after year. Last year it was the Manly got dudded and then the Sharks got dudded, both by, you know, one by Penrith, one by the Cowboys. It doesn't matter what happens. There is always going to be controversial calls. People are going to be unhappy. We could keep arguing about it and changing the leader of the band, whether it be the CEO or the referees department boss. But Matt Chechen has had 8 referees bosses in his time as an elite referee. 8! Doesn't that tell you something? It doesn't really matter who's in charge.
Yeah.
Controversy exists and people will argue the toss about these calls. So maybe it isn't the crisis that we think it is. This isn't a new low for referees, because every year is a new low for referees.
8 bosses over that time.
Can you imagine?
That means that there are, in a way, they're pushing the panic button and changing the boss.
And why are they doing that?
What comes first, though, was the chicken or the egg? The mistakes or the media pushing the mistakes? The mistakes are there.
I guess we'll let the punters decide.
Yes.
Speaking of the footy.
Let's talk about football.
Manly.
Daily.
Somehow, after what happened the week before against the Panthers, speaking of the Panthers, they hang on against the Sharks, and Daly Cherry-Evans, his field goal, it was one of the great field goals to win a game we've seen in recent times. Off the right foot, snaps back onto the left foot, threads the needle. When you see the various angles on our coverage on Fox League yesterday, to do what he did, it was outstanding the way he finished it so coolly and so calmly. It's a great strike off his left foot.
Yeah. Barrett wasn't surprised in the press conference. He said he stays back and he practices them off both feet every day. So it's quite incredible. I was sitting in the studio with Mick Ennis during Golden Point, and he's just got his hands in his head going, oh, God. At that moment in a Golden Point, it's all about who's your man, who's going to handle this moment. And you can bet odds on that Daly Cherry-Evans, if he's in the right position, is going to be able to win the game. And the Sharks just looked out on their feet and mentally shot a little bit at the end when they conceded to let the Manly level it. Unbelievable results. How many? What was that? 33-32, and then the other one was 40-31.
I know.
66 tries this weekend. That's a record.
Are we
round
tries,
one, or are we heading into the finals? It's crazy.
Yeah, remarkable. And, you know, the Trbojevic brothers were a massive part of that win for Manly. Again, they, in the set of 6 leading up to the field goal, they helped create the long break down the left-hand side. Jake's in there ball playing, and you cast your mind back a week. There he was, but on the verge of tears.
If you can ever be happy for Manly, you've got to be happy for them now. I'm sure, you know, everyone hates Manly. Isn't that the sign? But after seeing them at Brookvale the week before and seeing poor Tommy get that ball stolen remarkably by, you know, the kick-out hit, and then Nathan Cleary scoring under the posts to rob them of certain victory. They were broken. Trent Barrett was, I mean, he even said yesterday he feels like he's had 1,000 heart attacks this last fortnight. It's just been so horrible.
Is he dying his hair, Trent?
Why? Is that was there a bet?
Well, no, he's got to be getting some grey hairs, hasn't he, off the back of all of this. I mean, he's got to be dying his hair, honey.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like Gareth Widdop.
Salt and pepper's divine. That's the, I mean, he could rock the hair, it's fine.
So the Sharks now 4-7 against top eight teams.
Yeah, unbelievable.
That is a fairly large concern.
Amy Park against the Storm, who won't be happy with themselves after being beaten by South on the weekend. So
bad time to get Melbourne in Melbourne.
I can understand why Shane Flanagan kicked the crap out of that ice bucket in the out of that esky in the
show. Oh, I missed that.
Oh, you missed it. He was furious. I don't think he'll be happy, though, because we got it all on camera and he was having an absolute dummy spit at the players after that game. He was really, as you would be, disappointed. Didn't take control, didn't own the moment. Could have been pushing for a top four spot. Now 2 points out of the top four, heading into the Storm. Then they've got the Cowboys, the Knights, and finish against the Bulldogs.
Yeah. You'd think those last three games, Cowboys, Knights,
winnable.
Bulldogs, very winnable. As Shane Flanagan said yesterday, if we can't beat Manly on our own patch right here today, well, then, you know, we're no chance of winning our last four games.
Well, that was 33 points conceded. The only other big score they've conceded was earlier in the year when they were still getting their act together against the Dragons. They lost 40-20 or something like that. But usually they pride themselves on their defence, and some of the tries they conceded yesterday in front of their home fans, he won't be pleased with at all.
I was concerned coming here today knowing that you were filling in for Matty Russell because I was going to order a ventilator and get it installed right beside our little desk here in the digital suite because I called the Warriors and the Dragons down there at Wollongong on Saturday afternoon. Now, I know you've grown up a big Dragons fan. This season has promised so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much, Lars.
We're still in the top four.
They're hanging in there on percentage at the moment. And they've got
The Dragons fans were cheering when the Sharks lost and they were cheering the Raiders home. Sadly, that didn't happen. Yeah. But
they've got a 24-4 against differential over the Panthers. Four games to go.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what happens, that could evaporate quite easily should they both win. If the Panthers rack up a number in one of their games, perhaps this week against the Titans or against the Knights, then you know those 24 points, knowing what they can do, could evaporate like that.
Dragons have got Parramatta this weekend, an absolute must win. They have to come out from first minute with the same intensity, with the same enthusiasm and energy that they started the season. If they have had their off weeks, they're done. This has to be where it starts. Parramatta, West Tigers at Leichhardt the following week. Then the Bulldogs, and then they finish with the Knights up in Newcastle. So definitely some soul-searching for some of the players because they came out in that game and they didn't look... You were expecting them to be firing after being humiliated by the Roosters. Mm. It almost took them to have Dufty sent off. They conceded all those tries, but then at half-time, Paul McGregor went in, gave them four key messages, I'm told. They went out and they delivered on that. It wasn't enough. Their attack, they had plenty of opportunities and they couldn't find the try. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes some changes this week. He's going to have to. Paul Vaughan's gone for a few weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, Mary has told me. He's going to have to find someone to fill that massive hole in the middle. And then, some energy from certain players has definitely gone amiss since Origin. We mentioned the need to rest James Maloney. They didn't rest Jack DeBellin, whether that's catching up on them. He's so important to their side. Yes, he's one player. But when he's not bringing the energy and enthusiasm that he was for the first 2 months of the competition, the whole side as well needs to lift around him. But he probably can get back to some of that form that earned him that Blues jersey.
And the line is so fine. The difference between winning and losing at this level is so fine. If you're off by 1 or 2%, which is all it takes to make the big difference into the overall output, you just need those players not quite where they were at the start of the season. You think back to those games, like to Anzac Day.
Yeah, the
amount of defence they did. Remember that game, an Anzac Day, just kept repelling the Roosters, and the Roosters eventually said, we'll take the two, because the Dragons' intensity was off the charts, and it was such a tight game. Ben Hunt scores a try not long before half-time, and they go on to win the game. That intensity is just not there at the moment. Of course, you know, Matt Dufty being sin-binned was the pivotal moment of the game. Now, if he stays on the field, maybe they just sneak home. Maybe they still lose. We'll never know. My thoughts,
instrumental, because how many tries?
Well, they scored three tries.
Yeah.
And I've long said that when I'm the CEO of the NRL, when I usurp Todd Greenberg,
this is just the entree, days away.
Quite obviously, I'll be in charge of
today's podcast. Basically, they'll be calling you and saying, "Was you need to be the boss of the referees, the NRL, everything."
That's exactly right.
And the Daily Telegraph.
When I'm in charge, the first thing I will implement, no, I don't want to be in charge of a newspaper, thanks, Lars. When I'm in charge, the first thing I'm implementing is Matt Dufty. When he goes to the sin bin,
yep.
The moment the Warriors score, Matt Dufty is able to come straight back on the field, because I think that's the price you've paid for that sin binning.
Really?
Is the other team against 12 men scored the try and you come back on to make it third. Now, scored 60 seconds in. It was the first set after Dufty disappeared. They didn't take the two like plenty of teams have done. They took the option of taking the tap. We're going at them, and they scored straight away. Now, in my system, Dufty comes straight back on because I think you've paid the price for the indiscretion.
Mm.
The Dragons gave up two more tries. Now, it's not a given that you give up three tries when you have only 12 men on the field, because we've seen plenty of teams hold teams out for 10 minutes and, in fact, score tries while they were shorthanded. So what do you think of the idea that you come back on once the other team scores?
I would have loved it on Saturday.
I'm sure you would have.
But I think then we go into this area was where it depends on what the offence was. I imagine it was something pretty bad.
Foul play?
Yeah.
As opposed to a professional foul as it was with Dufty.
Yeah, I feel like then you're like, well, no, that's not enough time. You need to, especially if they score after 60 seconds of the
sin binning.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe it's a fight. Maybe that's when we go back to the idea that you could have a 5 minute for a lesser offence and a 10 minute for a bigger infringement. I can't think of off the top of my head, but I imagine if there's been a player this year sent for 10 for something more significant.
We've seen a few in more recent times for foul play after that edict came down from the NRL that they would encourage referees to use the sin bin more for foul play. We've seen a couple of those, not too many, but we've seen a couple.
So did Dylan Napa get binned when he hit someone against the Broncos? I can't remember.
Anyway, no, he didn't.
He didn't. That was controversial.
Yeah, he was placed on report and later
trying to think of someone
cleared by the
match
review committee.
Yeah. Anyway, but if it was for something where they took out a player, for instance, and that player was injured.
Sure.
And remember how we always say, well, that player shouldn't be allowed to take part in that game because it's punishing. It's punishing them for next week's, it's giving an advantage
to
them. Anyway.
Team next week, because he can't play against the next opponents as opposed to playing the rest of this game right here.
Yeah, and we've lost a player because of that hit. Like, let's go, anyway, I'm trying to think of a player who's been sent to the bin for taking out a player. That player's gone for the game. And then if they score a try and you let them straight back on, can you imagine the uproar?
Yeah. I mean, we've had this argument for for years, how you deal with that.
Yeah.
There is no perfect system.
But on Saturday, absolutely should have been allowed to come back after the first try conceded. All he did was grab the jersey. It was just a little grab of Roger, wasn't it? Was it Roger that he tried to grab?
It was Roger Tuivasa-Sheck racing through. Potentially, I don't know if he was going to score the try.
He
might have gone close-ish.
Yes.
But the fact that... and they have been, we talk about consistency, fans wanting consistency.
Mm.
Well, they've got consistency, haven't they? In that, I mean, pretty much the referees have nailed that for most of the season. If a player's going through the line and you reach out and grab him, it doesn't have to be much to upset that player and cost him the chance because Dufty got himself back in front of Tuivasa-Sheck with that action.
Mm.
You know, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And it's hard for the players. I feel for the players because it's instinctive.
Yeah.
They do it without really even thinking about it,
as
they've done probably throughout their entire career.
Yeah.
But now the highlights on it, you're not going to get away with it.
And we have the replay and the slow motion
and all of those
things back to television.
Imagine if we didn't have the replay.
Yeah, he'd be still on the field.
The Rabbitohs and the Storm played a blinder.
They absolutely did.
On Friday night. This got people talking about the footy and not about the referees, although, depending on your interpretation of how Melbourne approached the ruck and the wrestle, that will still have you talking about it. But the Bunnies, this was the game they've been looking for, because they won those 9 games in a row.
Mm.
But, looking back at who they beat in those games is fairly instructive.
There were question marks over whether they were genuine contenders. And I don't think many people would have tipped them, even though they were at home, because Melbourne, they seem to be on this rise. And I just genuinely thought, yes, they might be competitive, the Rabbitohs, and especially when they're behind on the scoreboard.
That's right.
At half time.
Not many teams do that against Melbourne.
And there were some indicators that maybe they were getting frustrated with each other, the Rabbitohs. So I was like, oh, here we go. They're gonna spit the dummy here.
Mm-hmm.
But then when their forwards really stood up, the Burgess boys, and when Damien Cook obviously stole the headlines with his magnificent try, that's going to give them so much confidence now that they, in their heads, know that if they didn't already, they probably did, because players always say, we had confidence. It was just us on the outside who thought that they weren't necessarily going to be able to match it with the top teams. But Wow, what a result.
Yeah, amazing. They had been a bit like the Panthers and the Dragons, a bit of a lull off the back of Origin. But by my reckoning, they were the team most likely to make a bounce back at some stage and be the team they were earlier in the season. I have question marks about the Dragons, but I think the Rabbitohs, and they've proven that with this win against the Melbourne Storm.
I feel like there's a gap now opening up. There's the top three of the top eight, and then the
It changes week by week, doesn't it? And we'll see that again this week, because the Bunnies play the route. I mean, what a run. Last week, 1v2. This week, it's 1v3. Yeah. But Bunnies Roosters this week, it's a blockbuster.
Absolutely.
And it's the sort of games you want to see leading into a final series. Yeah, the Rabbitohs had to bounce back after that loss to the Tigers. And then
the Roosters
scraped home against the Eels. They beat Melbourne. I think they'd just been almost in a bit of a holding pattern for a couple of weeks, two or three weeks, just waiting for that game almost.
Yep.
And they came out and they played the way they can. And they get Greg Inglis back.
Wow.
So I'm assuming he's going to be right to play this week against the Roosters.
Unbelievable.
Even if he doesn't play this week against the Roosters, he'll be back surely the week after against the Broncos, then they play the Raiders, then they finish with the Tigers again. So they've got a pretty good run, and if you're on top of the table, there's no reason they can't
run though. When you look at some of the other sides, this is a kind of run that you'd certainly, if you play well, that's a great way to get ready for September, because these are teams you're going to invariably meet again in the finals. What about the Roosters against the Cowboys, pushed all the way.
Well, and for a while there, they were in cruise mode. They were, maybe were in top gear at some stages of the first half, and then they just knocked it back a couple of notches to second gear, and they were cruising pretty much. And then the Cowboys, and Jonathan Thurston, remarkable as he is now, I think Brandy was right at the start of the season. This has got a lot of talk throughout the season. JT isn't the player he was. And maybe that comes with his...
No one wants to see him finish the way.
No, that's exactly right. But, he's not, the difference isn't that great. Again, it's only a few percentage points that he's below his best. Maybe if there is a big difference in his game, I think it comes in defence. He's not the same defender that he was. And that might have just been all off the back of the shoulder reconstruction last year. That's hard to come back.
Big thing, huge thing.
And he's not, like you speak to him, I speak to him. He's not a big guy now. He's solidly, he's solidly built for his size. But he's giving away, 125 kilogram men running at him on the edge a lot.
Yeah.
And he's knocked them over for all this time, all these seasons.
Yeah.
At some point, off the back of that shoulder reconstruction,
but
it's
hard
to come back from.
But he's still getting whacked all year.
He's still getting whacked. But,
and still getting up and owning the moment in the, particularly in the second.
And I guess, he's not as good as he once was, but he's as good once as he ever was.
Yeah.
And at times against the Roosters, he was as good as he ever was in that second half. You're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
JT putting on a show. Yeah. And as they did in 2015, can they produce a comeback here and upset the Roosters?
Yeah.
They didn't.
Yeah.
But that would maybe scare the Roosters a little bit. Maybe Trent Robinson would be concerned about that. He should be.
Yeah.
They didn't have Luke Keary, quite obviously, and he will be a big plus when he comes back.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jason Tomalolo, poor old James
Tedesco.
I mean, you don't like seeing a player get, but you kind of do. It was really awesome to see him just.
Well,
he was just grasping it. Yeah, anyway,
it was a bit like Greg Inglis on Jamie Soward.
Yeah,
remember when Jamie was a Dragon down there at the old Olympic Park, and Greg Inglis did one of those basically on poor Jamie.
The speed bump in defence, that was awful. He really never lived that down.
Well, and it's hard to come back from now. James Tedesco will move beyond that.
I think he could easily match. Go, okay, this was not a fair fight. He's coming at me at full speed. I'm on the try line. I'm in the first row now. That night was all about JT. To see him running around the stadium, giving his boots away, getting a guard of honour from the Roosters, getting the match ball, hearing what Trent Robinson had to say about him, comparing him to Arthur Beetson and the impact he's had on the game. A fair rap, because he's been a champion and he's going to be sorely missed. I can't imagine what it's going to be like next year not having him in the competition.
Imagine what Paul Green's thinking.
I know.
How's Paul?
Starting fresh.
He'd be rocking himself to sleep at night in a corner of the bed, just crying on his pillow. I haven't got JT from this point on. How am I going to cope?
Starting again. New generation.
Speaking of the Roosters and before that the Rabbitohs, let's maybe jump into some tips for this week. Now, I'll start out of order.
Oh, really?
Because game one up there on Thursday night in Townsville is the Cowboys and the Broncos. But while we're talking Bunnies and Roosters, This is the second meeting between these two teams earlier this season. The Rabbitohs got the better of the Roosters, 26-14 back in round six. And eerily, in that game, Damien Cook made an early bust and he terrorised the Roosters out of dummy half. Tom Burgess made a clean bust. Latrell Mitchell scored a ridiculous put-down try in the corner of the field. It was 8-all at half-time. James Tedesco made an error in the in-goal and Angus Crichton scored a gift of a try. Greg Inglis scored a try off a bomb. So many of the stars who featured heavily in that game have featured so heavily throughout the season for both these teams. I can't wait to see who wins it as the second game on Friday night. You'll see it live on Fox League, obviously. Do you have a tip for me?
I would have said the Roosters before this weekend, but now off the back of the Rabbitohs' performance against the Storm, I'm going to go the Rabbitohs. But incredible matchups, like the edges on both of these sides, the ability, the power, the scoring power that they've both got is going to be exciting. And then the matchups in the forwards, off the back of what they did to the Storm pack, the Burgess brothers, if they can do that again, then it allows Damien Cook to run riot. As you said, Luke Keary still not there. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, when you're looking at direct matchups, maybe that will be a big one for them again this weekend when, I don't know. I'll go the Rabbitohs. But do you know what? I think I got 3 from 8 this weekend and most people got 1.
It's that sort of season.
Yeah, impossible.
You're ahead of the average. Like you, I'm going to say if Inglis does play, Keary won't play. I'm going to say the Rabbitohs on that merit will probably get the cash.
Yep.
But not by much.
Yep. So you've got Cowboys, Broncos. Who are you going to go?
Cowboys, Broncos is the first game of the weekend, and I'm up there.
Okay.
And I've been to Townsville a few times in recent times. Second last game, speaking of JT, for the great JT at home.
Yep.
He'll finish it out in round 25 up there against the Eels. But Cowboys at home, fascinating game for the Broncos, quite obviously, off the back of that pretty insipid effort last week against the Bulldogs at ANZ Stadium. Whether they couldn't get themselves up for that game Thursday night, 6,000 fans there, big empty stadium. Maybe it just didn't gel with their mojo, their biorhythms, something. They didn't do yoga in the morning. They didn't walk the field before the game in their bare feet to soak up the minerals. I don't know what was happening. It just wasn't happening for the Broncos. Tough game because
It's the last Queensland derby. You know the Cowboys will be up for it now off the back of that performance against the Roosters. Yeah, I reckon. But then I get swept up in a fairy tale, so I could tip the Cowboys here. You know what? It's Monday. I'm just not sure.
I'm going to say the Broncos will bounce back. They can't win the comp.
Yeah.
By my reckoning. But I think they're positioned on the ladder about where they are.
Yep.
They're a seventh to ninth sort of team for mine. Now, they're obviously not going to finish ninth. They'll make the finals. But they're not a team that can win three. And if you finish in the bottom four of the top eight, then you have to win 4 games in a row. Broncos, I'll do something silly if the Broncos win 4 games straight at the end of the year to win the premiership.
Okay, we'll come up with something
silly. The halves still have way too many question marks over them. They were very good the week before against the Sharks. But again, Anthony Milford, Cody Nikorima, Darius Boyd got switched back from left centre back to fullback at the end of that game. Wayne Bennett wasn't happy with what he was seeing in attack. Whether Darius plays at fullback again this week or Asako is still there. Yeah. Lots of question marks hanging over the Broncos, and because of that, they can't win the premiership. But I think they can beat the Cowboys this week.
Okay.
So that's my tip for this one.
All right.
Warriors and Knights, first game on Friday over there at Mount Smart Stadium. It has an impact, quite obviously, for the Warriors as far as their position in the top eight.
I'm going to go Warriors.
They'll beat the Knights over there, given what we saw against the Dragons.
Yep.
I don't think they have any injury concerns coming out the back of that game against the Dragons, from memory.
No.
Saturday, 3 big games on Super Saturday. The Titans and the Panthers. The Panthers at CBAR Super Stadium.
You have to say the Panthers.
We'll get the better of the Titans. Seagulls and the Bulldogs, a non-top eight game. 5:30 game over there at Brookvale. Let's put it on the table right now. There probably won't be a big crowd for this game, so let's not make too much of the fact there's only going to be 8,000 people there to watch this game between these two teams. It won't be because the referees are in the papers.
No.
The fact there's only 8,000 there at Brookvale at 5:30 this Saturday.
I'm going to go
Seagulls at home.
Okay. Yeah, probably. But the Bulldogs have surprised me.
Tough week.
Yeah, this one's a hard one.
But you're worried about your tips already, I can see.
I worry greatly because I don't like being in the mid-range that I am at the moment. I need to make a run.
Okay.
I've only got 4 weeks to go.
Eels and Dragons is the second of my three games this week. Eels, we've spoken about this. It's exactly the game you don't want to play when you need a win against a team you are expected to beat in the shape of the Parramatta Eels. But the Eels, you just don't know what you're going to get. Most often you don't get a lot, but occasionally you'll get something out of them. They're okay, quite obviously, to beat the Titans over the weekend. But
this is huge.
You know, the
Dragons have to win. That's absolutely final. That's just how
I'm tipping the Dragons.
Yeah. It's too important.
But with not a lot of faith.
Okay. Well, yeah.
They'll be heavy
favourites. You're going to blow them away, Woz. You mark my words.
Okay. They'll bounce back.
They will.
If they are to be a factor, and if they're the team we thought they were, then
we will talk about it next week, but I have a feeling if I'm wrong, then I won't be happy next Monday.
The Raiders and the Tigers. Now, the Tigers, they're two wins out of the top eight. There's only four games left. They're a 0.003% chance of appearing in the finals. They need a host of results to go their way.
Yep.
And they go to take on the Raiders, who put 48 on them earlier this year at Campbelltown back in round what was that? It was round 15 at Campbelltown, 48 points. They put 50 on them regularly. The Raiders beat the Tigers for fun.
Yeah.
Just for fun.
This is always
and don't
a
even
high
try.
Scoring event. So.
And they beat them for fun with 30, 40, 50 point margins. The Raiders, no matter what's happened so far this year, will kill the Tigers' top eight aspirations stone
That's
dead
happening.
On
right.
Sunday.
Okay, fair enough.
Do you like that one?
Corey Thompson gone as well for the season. So,
The Tigers, Luke Brooks was good in patches and got them home against the Knights over the weekend.
But it wasn't convincing.
But there's just still not enough happening for mine regularly enough from Luke for them to be a contender. That will be put to bed this week. And then the blockbuster, the second of a couple of them this week, the Storm at home against the Sharks. Second meeting this year between the two of them. Can you remember the first time they met this year?
Yes, at Shark Park. It was bananas.
My goodness. I called it. It still is burned into my memory. 14-4, the Sharks won that one. Cameron Smith sent to the sin bin.
First time.
Matt Checken was the referee. They blew 33, something like that, penalties. It caused a ruckus, didn't it?
This is when the refs were really, you know.
Was that peak?
That was the nitpicking.
Peak crisis?
Yeah,
was that peak crisis or is this the peak crisis we're in now? It's hard to know when peak crisis in referees actually occurs.
Do we want to go into this? Because I think that tells you what impact that would have had on that game.
Mm-hmm.
The beginning part of the season when we were having that many penalties, there are games that were affected greatly result-wise by having that many penalties and we're not doing it now.
So how does that affect this game here? The Sharks, Wade Graham was back for that game yesterday. He's pivotal to their performance and their chances in the Premiership.
Well, the Sharks have got to fix their defence.
Yeah.
You can't concede that many and against the Storm.
That's an issue for them. I think at home the Storm bounces back off that loss to the Rabbitohs and they get the cash in this one.
That is Women in League Round, by the way.
Of course.
We're really looking forward to this at Fox League. We've got a big week ahead. On League Life, we're going to sit down with Rebecca Frizzell, one of the part owners of the Titans, and she's an incredibly intelligent and inspiring woman. She's got a lot of very great insights to give us around football, but around women in the game, and a great perspective to hear from her. Karen Murphy, the head of the NRL Integrity Unit, I catch up with her. She's a very powerful woman, obviously, in her role on the Integrity Unit. And we've got Maddie Studden, the Rooster, the New South Wales captain as well. She's going to drop in on League Life. So a jam-packed show that's going to be. But we're all really excited as well to have the women's comp not far away. So I think you're going to see a lot more of the female players of the women's game be rolled out across our coverage. So many great stories to hear. Sammy Bremner and Isabel Kelly are on 360 tonight.
Does Maddie have a job yet? Because she lost her job off the back of playing the Origin game at New South Wales down there.
I think
it
was a personal choice. That's what she'll clear up.
Well, I guess they gave her an ultimatum, like it's us or it's footy.
Yeah, I think she was
chose football,
ready for,
I suppose.
For to become an elite athlete, probably, and to put all her energy into that.
Yeah.
So you know, and she's got the opportunity to do that, which is fortunate because not every female athlete can. They've got to have a job and balance.
And you know, it would be fantastic to be able to wave a wand and solve this issue straight away and and put women's sport across the board, no matter what code it is, no matter what style of sport it is, on exactly the same footing as men's sport. But it takes time, and it will happen, but it doesn't happen overnight. I wish it would. And in areas where it has, that you had this history of women being on an equal footing, like in tennis. So at the majors, the women for a fair while now have earned exactly the same money as the men, but they've had, and that took a while to come. Like, that was decades in the making, despite both men and women playing for Grand Slam trophies over, you know, from the 20s, 30s, all the way through to this new century. It took a long time for that to happen. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous it took that long to happen. And it would be fantastic, as I say, to wave the wand and fix all these issues right now and have the women sportsmen, sportswomen on the same exact footing, earning exactly the same money as the men.
Yeah.
And it will probably happen in a lot of sports, and maybe some of it takes, again, it might take decades, unfortunately. But I just get a little bit frustrated when I see, current administrators of sports getting hammered for not completely fixing this right now.
Yeah.
And it just can't happen that way.
Yeah. I
would love it to.
It's happening. It's happening. That's the main thing.
And that's right.
This time last year, there was a lot of frustration from probably the girls that do play our game, because, you know, that. But this has been a long process, and it's
think of the ground that's been made.
There's still some way to go, but I think the best part is that the girls are engaged in the conversation heavily. The hashtag around the women's game is our way, which is reflective of very much how the NRL is approaching this. The Gillaroos and the elite athletes that play rugby league at that level have been consulted along the way. They're the ones feeding back and saying, this is what we think would work. There was criticism around the current comp, which is coming up at finals time, where there's only four teams. But this was directly coming from the players themselves. They don't want a competition where the level of play isn't at its ultimate best.
Sure.
And we've only just fixed the pathways, let's not forget that. So we're a bit behind when it comes to developing the next big thing. And that's now fixed. We've got an ability for girls to play from the bottom right up until the elite. Before, they were lost in the game at around 13, 14. There wasn't somewhere for the girls to play. Now they can play. So the four teams will mean we have got a ripper competition. The best players from New Zealand and Australia playing for the Roosters, the Dragons, the Broncos and the Warriors. I think there'll be so much excitement once it does kick off when we see the girls play at Origin level, when it was one of the best games we've seen all year at North Sydney Oval, when they play for the Gillaroos against the Kiwi Ferns, that's what the kind of quality we're going to be able to see. The Roosters, mind you, are stacked. Surprise, surprise. They have got an unbelievable team, I think.
Dragons aren't going too bad.
Dragons have got great players.
Hezzy Apps.
Yeah, absolutely. Sammy, but if you look at just have a look at the Roosters, they've got, I think, 12 Origin players they signed, which is wonderful. The Dragons have gone with a more local approach. They've got a great feeder program down in the Illawarra area. They've got a lot of girls from the local area. They've got Kezzy, they've got Sammy Bremner, they've got Jessica Serger. So they've got some elite girls. But yeah, can't wait for that to kick off. There's going to be a heap of stories around these women and the inspiration that they are, because they're juggling it all at the moment. But, you know, once this gets underway, then next year we can look at hopefully growing to more teams, and the Sharkies and the Rabbitohs fans will be satisfied.
And to finish on a personal anecdote as to why it's important we continue to grow this part of rugby league, but also grow women's sport, sitting there watching that game at a water polo training session for my son. North Sydney Oval is packed, there's a very good crowd there at North Sydney Oval, 8,000, whatever it was, on that rep weekend, and it's broadcast live on TV, and I'm sitting there with my phone beside my daughter, my 13-year-old daughter, and we've both got an earbud in each ear, sitting there huddled together, watching the game while water polo training is happening out there in the pool, and she couldn't take her eyes off it, and we went and got something to eat at halftime, came back, and she insisted that we watched the second half of that game. She won't watch an NRL game for 30 minutes, let alone an entire NRL game. She was besotted with this women's game, and that is the impact it can make and why it's so important and why it will grow and it will continue to grow.
I can't imagine being a little girl now and being able to watch.
Fantastic.
And be able to have thought, like, it was never a thing that I could think I would, like, I love NRL, but it was never, oh, I'll be an NRL player.
That's
but
right.
Now these young girls can be what they see, which is an elite athlete in our sport.
Ground has been made, but there is more ground to make, and the efforts will continue on, no doubt. Hey, Lars.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
Yeah, it has been
fun. Will we do it again next week?
Yeah, I think we've made you the CEO. So, and we've also decided...
Well, if I'm the CEO, you're back next week.
We've also decided that the Broncos are going to not win the premiership. And if they if they do, then you're going to do something crazy.
Yeah, I was going to say something silly, but I've done it in the past.
We'll come up with something silly by next week. And then if the Dragons don't thump the Eels, I'll be really cranky.
Okay, we'll see how it works out. Good luck to your Dragons. Thanks for listening. This is You Can Take Me Now. I Have Seen It All.